Most people, in the West particularly, are not aware of the actual occurrences of their astral traveling. They are not aware of any particular incident, but when they return they may have a warm feeling of friendship, or they may say, "Oh, I dreamed of so-and-so last night, he did look well." In all probability the person actually did visit so-and-so, or whoever it was, because such travel is one of the simplest and the most frequently undertaken. For some peculiar reason we always seem to gravitate to old haunts. We seem to like to go places where we have visited before. In fact, the police have a statement to the effect that criminals always return to the scene of their crimes. There is nothing at all remarkable in us visiting friends because we all leave the physical body. We all do astral journeying and we must go somewhere. Until one is educated to the subject, one does not roam in astral realms, but instead clings tenaciously to known places on the surface of the earth. People who have not been taught about astral traveling may visit friends overseas, or a person with a very great desire to see some particular shop or location will go and see the shop or location, but upon their return to the flesh and to awakeness they think, if they think at all, that they have had a dream. 103. Do you know why you dream? We all have experiences which are excursions into reality. Our dreams are as real as a journey from England to New York by plane or ship, or from Aden to Accra by similar means, yet we term them dreams. Before delving further into the subjects of dreams, let us remind one that since the Convention of Constantinople in the year 60, when the leaders of the Christian Church decided what was to be embodied in Christianity, much of the teachings of the great masters have been distorted or suppressed. We could add some very pungent comments on all this from information which we have obtained from the Akashic record, but our purpose in preparing this course is to help people to know themselves, not to tread on anyone's corns, no matter how fallacious those corns of belief may be. Let us content ourselves with stating that in the Western Hemisphere for several centuries past people quite definitely have not been taught anything about astral traveling because it does not fall into any portion of organized religion. Incidentally, let us remind you that we say here organized religion. Again, in the Western Hemisphere most people do not believe in fairies nor in nature spirits, and children who see fairies and nature spirits, and who undoubtedly play with such entities, are laughed at or scolded by adults who really should know better, for in this, as in many other cases, the child is far cleverer and far more awake than is the adult. Even the Christian Bible states that unless ye be as a little child you cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven. We could state this differently and say, if you have the belief of a child uncontaminated by adult disbelief you can go anywhere at any time. Children, being scoffed at, learn to disguise what they really see. Unfortunately, they soon lose the ability to see other entities because of this need of concealing their real abilities. It is much the same in the case of dreams. People have experiences when their physical body is asleep, for of course the astral body never sleeps, and when the latter returns to the former there may be a conflict between the two. The astral knows the truth and the physical is contaminated and clogged by preconceived notions inculcated from childhood up to adulthood. Through conditioning adults will not face up to the truth, so there arises a conflict. The astral body has been off and done things, experienced, 104, things, seen things, but the physical must not believe in this because the whole teaching of Western people is to disbelieve anything that cannot be held in the two hands and pulled to pieces to see how it works. Westerners want proof, more proof, and still more proof, and all the time they try to prove that the proof is wrong. Thus we have the conflict between the physical and the astral, and that leads to a need for rationalization. In this case the dreams, so-called, are rationalized into some sort of experience, frequently with the weirdest results imaginable. Let us go into it again. We could have all sorts of unusual experiences when astral traveling. Our astral body would like us to wake up with a clear memory of all these experiences, but again, the physical body cannot permit it, so there is a conflict between the two bodies, and some truly amazingly distorted pictures come back into our memories, things which could not possibly happen. Whenever anything happens in the astral which is contrary to the physical laws of the physical earth there is conflict, And so fantasy sets in and we get nightmares or the most unusual happenings which one can imagine. In the astral state one can levitate, float upwards, travel anywhere and see anyone, and visit any of the centers of the world. In the physical it is not possible to move across the rooftop, and thus it is, we repeat, that in the conflict between the physical body and the astral body there are such extremely distorted renderings of our astral traveling experiences which really nullify any benefit which is trying to be sent down by the astral. We get so-called dreams which do not make sense to us, we dream all sorts of rubbish, or so we say when we are in the physical, but the things which are rubbish in the physical are commonplace in the astral. Let us return to our original remarks about walking down the street without a stitch of clothing on. Quite a number of people have had this highly embarrassing experience apparently in a dream, but, of course, it is not a dream at all. It arises from the fact that when one goes astral traveling one may forget all about wearing astral clothes. If a person does not imagine the necessary covering then we have the spectacle of someone traveling in the astral completely nude. Many times a person will leave the physical body and soar upwards and outwards in a great hurry, in great excitement at having got free of the cloying flesh. 105. Getting out of the body was the prime achievement, leaving no opportunity for thinking about other things. The natural body, we must remind you, is a body without clothing, for clothing is a purely man-made convention which has no point in reality. We might digress here for a moment to tell you something else which possibly will intrigue you. In the days of long ago man and woman could see the astral of each other. Thoughts then were plain to all, one's motives were absolutely open, and, we tell you again, that the colors of the aura flare most vividly and most strongly around those areas which people now keep covered. Mankind, and especially womankind, keeps certain areas covered because they do not want others to read their thoughts and their motives, which may not be always desirable. But this, as we said, is quite a digression and has little bearing on dreams. It is a point, though, which may cause you to ponder on clothing. When one is doing astral traveling one usually imagines the type of clothing which one would normally wear in the daytime. If this imagining is omitted, a clairvoyant receiving an astral visitor may receive that person and find that he or she has not a stitch of clothing on. We have had people call on us in the astral and they were wearing either nothing or perhaps a pajama jacket, or some other quite out of this world garment which defies description and possibly would not be found in any lingerie catalogue of the present day. It is a fact also that people who are over clothes conscious will often imagine themselves, dream themselves up, clothing which they would not at all wear when in the physical body. But all this does not matter, because we again state that clothing is merely a convention of humanity and we do not suppose that when we got to heaven we shall be wearing clothing such as there is upon this earth. Dreams, then, are a rationalization of actual living events which occur in the astral world, and as we have previously stated, when one is in the astral one sees with a far greater range of colors and with far, far greater clarity. Everything is brighter, everything is larger than life, one can see the most minute details, the colors are of a range far surpassing anything that can be upon this earth. Let us give an example here. 106. We wandered out in our astral form far across the land and over the sea to a distant country. The day was brilliant with a vivid blue sky, and the sea beneath us had gentle white topped waves flicking up at us. But, of course, not touching us. We sank down upon a golden sand and stopped to examine the wondrous diamond-like structure. Every point of sand glittered like gems in the sunlight. We moved along gently over waving fronds of seaweed, we were amazed at the delicate browns and greens and the air bladders which seemed to be turning golden pink. To our right was a rock of greenish tinge. It looked for a moment as if of the purest jade. We could see part way through the outer surface, we could see the veins and the striations, and we could see also some minute fossil-like creatures which had been embedded in the rock millions of years before. As we moved around we looked about us with eyes that seemed to be new, with eyes that saw as never before. We could see what appeared to be transparent globes of color floating in the atmosphere, globes which were indeed the living force of the air. The colors were marvelous, intense, varying, and our acuity of vision was such that we could see as far away as the curvature of the earth would permit without causing us to lose any detail whatsoever. Upon this poor old earth of ours, while encased in flesh, we are comparatively blind. We have a limited range of colors and a poor perception of the shades of colors. We suffer from myopia, astigmatism, and other defects which make it impossible for us to see things as they really are. Here we are almost bereft of senses and perceptions. We are poor things indeed upon this earth, encased as we are in a sheath of clay, loaded down with lusts and grudges and clogged with the wrong type of food. But when we get out into the free world of the astral, we can see with the greatest clarity, see colors such as we never saw upon the earth itself. If you have a dream in which you see with startling clarity, and in which you are delighted by the amazing array of colors, then you can know that you have not had an ordinary common dream, but a rationalizing, a genuine astral traveling experience. There is another matter which prevents many people from remembering their pleasures in the astral. It is this: when one is in the astral, one is vibrating at a far, far higher rate than when one is encased, 107, in the body. It is an easy matter when leaving the body, because the difference in vibrations matters not at all when one is going out. The obstacles occur when we return to our body, and if we know what those obstacles are now, we can consciously dwell upon them and help astral and physical vehicles to reach some sort of arrangement. Let us imagine that we are in the astral, our flesh body is below us. It is vibrating at a certain speed, ticking over almost, while the astral body is aquiver with life, with vitality, for you are not bogged down with illness or with suffering in the astral. Perhaps it will help us if we put things in terms of the earth. Let us consider that we are dealing with the problems of a person in a bus. The bus is traveling at, maybe, 20 or 30 miles an hour, and the passenger urgently desires to leave the bus, which, unfortunately, cannot be stopped. So the problem is that the passenger has to jump off the bus in such a manner that he alights in the roadway without hurting himself in any way at all. If he is careless, he gets badly damaged, but if he knows how, it can be done easily, for one often sees bus personnel doing it. We have to learn by experience how to get off the bus when the vehicle is moving. We also have to learn how to get into the body when the speeds of the two vehicles are different. When we return from astral traveling experiences, our problem is to get into the body. Again, we are vibrating in the astral at a much higher rate than we are in the physical, and as we cannot slow down the one nor speed up the other more than a very, very limited amount, we have to wait until we can synchronize a harmonic between the two. With practice we can do that. We can slightly speed up the physical body and slightly slow down the astral body, so that while they are still at widely dissimilar vibrations, there is a fundamental harmonic, a compatibility of vibration, between the two, and that enables us to get in safely. It is a matter of practice, instinctive, racial memory practice. And when we can do that, we can get all our memories intact. Do you find this difficult to realize? Then let us imagine that your astral body is a phonograph pickup. Your physical body is a phonograph record turning at, what speed shall we say? -48 revolutions per minute? Our problem is to put the needle onto the rotating record so that we hit upon one particular word or one particular musical note. If you think of 108, the difficulties of putting this phonograph pickup in contact with the record so that the previously determined word or musical note is chosen, then you will appreciate how difficult it is, without practice, to come back from the astral with memories intact. If we are clumsy or unpracticed, and we come back without being in synchronization, we awaken feeling thoroughly out of sorts, we feel cross with everything, we have migraine, possibly we feel sick and bilious. That is because the two sets of vibration were united with a clash, just as one can get disharmony and a very definite clash if one changes gear in a car in a clumsy manner. If we come back at the wrong rate of vibration, we may find that the astral body does not fit exactly into the physical body, it may be tilted to one side or the other, and the result is thoroughly depressing. If we are so unfortunate as to do this, the only cure is to go to sleep again or rest as quietly as possible, not moving, not thinking if one can manage it, keeping quite still and trying to get the astral body free from the physical once more. The astral body will drift up and lift a few feet above the physical body, and then, if we allow it, it will sink down and come back into the physical body in perfect alignment. We shall not feel sick or depressed anymore. It only takes practice and perhaps 10 minutes of your time. It is better to give this 10 minutes and feel well, than jump up all in a rush and feel that you would be happy to die on the spot, because you cannot and will not feel better until you have been to sleep again and allowed your two vehicles to come completely into alignment. Sometimes one comes back to awareness in the morning with memories of a very peculiar dream indeed. Possibly it may be of some historical occurrences, or it may be quite literally something out of this world. In that case it may well be that for some specific reason connected with your training you have been able to contact the Akashic record. We shall deal with that in a later lesson, that you could see what happened in the past, or, more rarely, what will probably happen in the future. Great seers who make prophecies can often move the future and see probabilities, not actualities, for they have not happened, but probabilities can be known and foretold. You will see from this that, the more one can cultivate a memory of what occurs in the astral, the more benefits one can derive because there is no point in learning, 109, something with much toil and trouble if one is going to forget all about it within the next few minutes. It frequently happens that one awakens in the morning thoroughly bad-tempered, thoroughly hating the world, and all that is within it. It takes one many, many hours to recover from this really black and gloomy mood. There are a number of reasons for this particular attitude. One is that in the astral state one can do pleasant things, go to pleasant places and see happy people. Normally one goes into the astral as a form of recreation for the astral body while the physical body sleeps and recuperates. In the astral one has a feeling of freedom, an utter lack of restriction and constriction, the feeling is truly wonderful. And then comes the call back into the flesh to start another day of, what? Suffering? Hard work? Whatever it is usually unhappy. And so having come back, having been torn away from the pleasures of the astral one is truly unhappy and bad-tempered on awakening. Another reason, and not such a pleasant one, is that when we are on earth we are as children in a classroom learning, or trying to learn, the lessons which we ourselves planned to learn before coming to the earth. When we go to sleep it is so that the astral body can leave school and go home at the end of the day in just the same way as children return to their homes at the end of the day. Many times, though, a person who is self-satisfied and complacent upon the earth, thinking that he or she is a very important person, will go to sleep and then awaken in the morning in a thoroughly bad mood. This is usually because that person has seen in the astral that he is making a shocking mess of his life on the physical earth, that all the smugness and all the complacency is not really getting him anywhere. It does not at all follow that because a person has a load of money and acres of property that he is doing a good job. We come to earth to learn specific things just as a person going to a school or college learns to do specific things. It would be quite useless, to give you an example, for a college student to enroll for a course leading to a Doctor of Divinity degree and then for no explainable reason find that he was going to collect all the trash, all the garbage, from some local town. Too many people will think that they are doing extraordinarily well because they are amassing money by swindling other people, by overcharging, by generally profiteering and, 110, giving bad deals. Those people who are class conscious or the nouveau riche are not really proving anything except that they are making a resounding failure of their life upon earth. There is a time when everyone has to face up to reality, and reality is not upon this earth, for this is the world of illusion wherein all values are wrong, where for purposes of tuition one believes that money and temporal power and position are all that matters. Nothing could be further from the case than this, for the mendicant monks of India and elsewhere are of more spiritual value to the future life than the high-powered financier who lends out money at exorbitant interest to poor people who are hard-pressed and really suffering. These financiers, really they are money lenders, really wreck the homes and the futures of those who are so unfortunate as to fall behind with one of the extortionate payments. Let one of these high-powered financiers and others of their ilk go to sleep, and assume that for some particular reason they can get free from the flesh and get far enough to see what sort of a mess they are making. Then they come back with a perfectly shocking memory, they come back with an awareness of what they really are and with a determination that they will turn over a new leaf. Unfortunately, when they come back into the physical, being of a low type anyway, they cannot remember, and so they just say that they have had a disturbed night, they shout at their subordinates and generally bully everyone in sight. And so they give way to Monday morning blues, but sadly enough they do not let this occur on Monday morning only but almost every other day. Monday morning blues. Yes, that really is the case, and for a special reason. Most people have to work fairly regularly, or at least put in regular hours of work during so many days a week. At the end of the week there is a period of relaxation, a change of vocation and often of venue. People sleep more peacefully at the end of the week, and so the astral body goes out and travels further, it goes up to where perhaps it can see what sort of a job the physical is doing on Earth, and then when it returns so that the physical body can start work on the Monday morning, there is generally much gloom, which is the cause of Monday morning blues. 111, yet another class of people should engage our attention even if for a few moments only, those who sleep little. These people are unfortunate enough to have so much on their astral conscience that the astral body is not at all willing to leave the physical and go out and face up to things. Often a drunkard will be afraid to fall asleep because of the quite interesting entities which gather around his emerging astral body. We have already dealt with pink elephants and other fauna and flora of that type. The physical, in such a case, will stay awake and be the cause of much suffering in the physical and on the astral. You have probably known people who are on edge all the time, they are on the move all the time, they are jittery and cannot rest for a moment. All too frequently these people are those who have so much on their mind, on their conscience, that they just dare not rest in case they start to think and realize what they are, and what they are doing, and what they are undoing. So the habit starts, no sleep, no relaxation, nothing which gives the overself an opportunity of really getting in touch with the physical. These people are like a horse which has taken the bit between its teeth and is bolting wildly down the road to the danger of all. If people cannot sleep, they cannot profit by a life on earth, and not profiting in this life, then they have to come again to do a better job next time. Do you wonder how to decide whether a dream is a figment of the imagination or is a distorted memory from an astral journey? The easiest way is to ask yourself, do you see things with greater clarity in that dream? If you do, then it is a memory of astral traveling. Were the colors more vivid than you can remember seeing them upon Earth? Then, again, it is astral traveling. Often you will see the face of a loved one, or have a strong impression of a loved one, that is because you may have visited that person by astral traveling, and if you go to sleep having in front of you a photograph of the loved one, then you can be sure that you are going to travel there when you close your eyes and let yourself relax. Let us take the other side of the coin. You may have awakened in the morning ruffled and not a little angry, thinking of some particular person with whom you are definitely not in harmony. Perhaps you went to sleep thinking of that person, thinking of some dispute, some 112, wrangle with which you and he were engaged. You may have visited him in the astral, and he, also in the astral, discussed with you a solution of the problems. You may have settled the matter. You may both have determined in your astral states that upon Earth you would remember the solution and you would come to an amicable agreement. Or, on the other hand, the battle may have been of even greater intensity so that when you came back to the Earth you had even greater antipathy to each other than before. But no matter whether you had an amicable arrangement or not, if, in coming back to the physical, you had a bad jerk or did not synchronize yourself with your physical body, then all your good intentions, all your good arrangements would be shattered and distorted, and upon awakening your memory would be of disharmony, dislike, and bitter frustrated rage. Dreams, so-called, are windows into another world. Cultivate your dreams, examine them, when you go to sleep at night decide that you are going to dream true, that is, Decide that when you awaken in the morning you will have a clear and uncontaminated memory of all that happened in the night. It can be done, it is done. It is only in the Western world where so much doubt, so many shouts for proof are heard, that people find it difficult. Some people in the East go into trances which, after all, is only one method of getting out of the physical. Others fall asleep, and when they awaken they have the answers to the problems which perplexed them. You too can do this, you too, with practice, and with a sincere wish to do it. Only for good can dream true and open wide that window into a most glorious phase of existence. Lesson 18. We have known each other for some time now through the medium of this course. Perhaps we should pause a while to take stock of our position and look about us, and think of what we have read and presumably what we have learned. It is essential to stop every so often for the purpose of recreation. Do you ever think that recreation is really recreation? We mention this point because it is all tied in with tiredness. If one becomes tired, one cannot do one's best work. Do you know what happens when you get tired? 113. We do not have to have great knowledge of physiology in order to understand why we get stiff and sore if we overtax a muscle. Let us consider that we have been repeating a certain action, perhaps lifting a heavy weight with the right arm. Well, after a time the muscles of the right arm begin to pain us, we get a most peculiar sensation in the muscles, and if we continue too long we suffer real pain instead of just soreness. We should look into this even closer. During this course it has been stressed that all life is electrical in origin. Whenever we think we generate an electric current, whenever we move a finger even we send an electric current in the form of a nerve impulse which galvanizes a muscle into action. But let us consider our arm which we have abused with overwork. We have been lifting something too often for too long and the nerves which carry the electric current from the brain have become overstressed. In much the same way, if we get an ordinary house fuse and you overload it, the fuse may not immediately blow but instead it will show evidence of overload in that it becomes discolored. So with our nerves leading to muscles, they become overstressed with the passage of continuous current, and the muscles themselves get tired of expanding and contracting continuously. Why do they get tired? That is easy to answer. When we move a limb our muscles become stimulated from the brain. The electric current causes secretions to flow in the muscular structure which causes the strands of muscles to strain apart, so that if you get a whole strand, or collection of strands, straining apart the result is to decrease the total length, and that means a limb had to bend. That is all right, we are not going into physiology, but a secondary result is that the chemicals involved in causing the striations of muscles to strain apart becomes crystallized and embedded in the tissue. Thus it is that if we send these secretions, these chemicals, into the musculature more quickly than the tissue can absorb them, the result will be crystals, and those crystals having very sharp edges will cause considerable pain if we persist in our attempts to move the muscles. We can only wait perhaps a day, or 2 days, until the crystals have again been absorbed and the fibers of the muscles are again free to slide smoothly and effortlessly over each other. It is worth noting in passing that when one has, 114, rheumatism, one has crystals in various susceptible portions of the body which lock tissue together. Actually, any person with rheumatism can move the afflicted limb, but to do so would cause intense pain because of the crystals lodged in the tissue. If we could find some way of dissolving the crystals, then we should be able to cure rheumatism, but that is not yet. This is rather taking us away, though, from our original intention to consider some of the things we have learned, or, on second thoughts, perhaps it is not. If you are trying too hard you will not get anywhere because your brain will become over-tired. Many people cannot adopt the middle way because they have been brought up to believe that only the hardest work merits results. People strive and slave, and they get nowhere because they are over-trying. Sometimes people who try so hard become over-tired, and then they say horrible things because, quite literally, they are not in possession of their full senses. When we become tired the electric current produced in the brain fades, it becomes less, and so the negative electricity overrides the positive impulses making us bad-tempered. Bad temper is the opposite of good temper, It is the negative aspect of good temper, and if we let ourselves get bad-tempered through over-tiredness, or through any other cause, it means that we are in effect corroding cells which produce current within us. Do you drive a car? Do you ever look at the battery of your car? If you do, you will at times have seen a most unpleasant greenish deposit around one of the terminals of the battery.